My name's Vaughan Knight, and I'm here to talk to you about Windows 8 game and high performance development. So, that's obviously the hashtags if you want to heckle or talk about the session, but let's get started. So, what I'm going to go through, I'm going to go through the current state of play, what's happening around Windows 8 and game development on Windows 8. What your options are and what, you know, what the options are within the platform options. So you've got HTML, C#, C++. Comparisons, I definitely will be comparing them because none is better than the other. They're all good at something very specific. I'm going to talk about game development concepts and how you should be approaching your development no matter what platform you're developing a game on. And then I'm going to hack out some C++, which is probably me just showing you some stuff that I've done. C++ is not a very demo-friendly language to be using, but I can sort of be going through it. So if you don't know C++, it's not a problem. It's not really that I'm showing you stuff, how to do stuff in C++, but I'm just showing you that there's frameworks out there at the moment that are there, and a lot of the principles just still apply to absolutely everything. So going on to game development. Dodo GoGo. So a lot of you have seen these shirts around. I'm actually wearing mine, not to promote it, because I spilled coffee on my speaker shirt 2 seconds before I walked in here. So Dodo GoGo is a game that I wrote. It's a HTML5 JavaScript game. It's on the Windows 8 store now. It costs nothing at the moment. Let me just change something and you can all go download it. No, it was released on June 2nd with a release preview. We've had a lot of downloads. I've learned a lot. I've been developing games for a very, very long time, but I have not been publishing games for a long time. And I think that's one of the big failures of a lot of game developers. They never actually get something out the door, and I suffered from it for about 20 years. I'll give you a quick demo of the game. Let me just check that GlovePie is running. Which it is. And, it's a simple game, and we learned so much from this by just, and Bitrape is us. So, so this is Dodo GoGo, and the aim of Dodo GoGo is to pretty much save the dodo from the volcano. So it's an endless jumper, and this is all done in HTML5, Canvas, and JavaScript. A lot of the core is heavily based on Impact.js, which is a library. And as you can see, you sort of bounce your way. It starts off pretty easy, and then you get bonuses that help you float, and away you go. Just quickly, do we have audio? There we go. So I'll start again. You're all laughing because I died, I just realized. Thanks a lot. Also, it's not funny that I don't have audio. Okay, so away you go. So it's a very, very sort of simple game. And what we've found is by doing something simple and not trying to overblow it and do the greatest game, a AAA title in the world, what we ended up doing is we created a game that we thought, okay, it's out the door, we like the look of it, we're quite happy with the way that it looks, and at the end of the day, it's done. And we're incredibly popular in Brazil, we're incredibly popular in China, we're incredibly popular in Mexico, people love it. I don't know what they're saying because I can't read their reviews. but it is fantastic. You've released this thing and there's all this sort of stuff that sounds like me pretending I'm speaking Mexican and an exclamation mark and 5 stars, and it's been really fantastic for us to go through this journey. What we're doing now is doing a full rewrite of this in C++, and the whole point of that is we don't want to push it further. And we did hit some boundaries with HTML and JavaScript, but this is, you can create games in HTML and JavaScript. So, some of the other things, you've got all the integration with everything else on the platform. You can share, so you can go through, probably haven't set up mail, so that's not going to work. Go through here again, go to SkyDrive, and hopefully... should pop up with the image. But what you can share is that screenshot of the moment that you got your high score. So it's not showing it there, but it doesn't matter. So that actual screenshot of when I got my high score, I can go and share that with people. And so you can do a lot of really rich stuff with HTML these days. And that was really to prove to us that you could do it. And being on the store as the HTML5 game by indie developers is a great way to sort of raise your profile. So it's been quite good for us. Anyway, enough of that music. I listened to it the last 6 months. So it was quite funny when we launched it. They said, the song's a bit repetitive. I was just like, oh, you have no idea. So HTML5 and JavaScript. Obviously, Canvas support and audio support are there. It's fantastic because then you can create games. The JavaScript execution within the HTML engine, or the IE10 engine, is incredibly fast. One of the things that's also quite fast is just drawing those things to Canvas. They're hardware accelerated. And so you can paint an image this big or this big, and they paint in almost the same time. So you can do some really things that you would think would be incredibly expensive, and now they're quite cheap because these things get loaded into the graphics card. And Visual Studio 2012, we started not on 2012. 2012 definitely improves the story. The JavaScript, IntelliSense, and everything else make it just really easy to work with. It's not perfect, but man, it's so much better than anything else. And a lot of people use some other frameworks, but once you start building a game, it's a very rich, very complex application. And generally, those tools start to fall apart at that stage, and Visual Studio keeps going. So it's a really good tool for JavaScript development. In the C-sharp land, you know, you've got DirectX and the power of DirectX. Obviously, developing Visual Studio, and C-sharp's probably the strongest in Visual Studio. And you've also got SharpDX, which wraps DirectX for you. I guess one of the things with C-sharp is that it's probably the language that's the easiest to work within. You know, it's robust at the same time as being flexible, and there's a rich set of libraries to do your day-to-day tasks. Like concatenating strings is quite easy, whereas in C++, you know, you have to do these sort of ways that you probably never thought you ever needed to do. So, but from the C++ perspective, I guess from a platform, it's really DirectX and Visual Studio 2012. So, you know, C++ is where you get your highest performance, but not everything needs that level of performance. So what this means is Visual Studio 2012, and this is the Visual Studio track, but it is fantastic for game development. And I've found more and more that I try to use other tools because I feel that I need something else fixed in that pipeline of development, and then I find that tool just doesn't do a plethora of things that I really, really miss. Being able to do integration with a lot of your pipeline tools. So I don't know if you saw the announcement, and this isn't for Windows 8 store apps, although they've announced that they're coming to it, but Unity released Unity VS, Unity being the game development platform, where you can start debugging with Visual Studio within the game development environment. If you haven't seen Unity, go and check it out. And just things like Photoshop and all these other tools that people use when they're developing games. And when you're developing games, you use a broad range of tools. And so some of the things I'll be talking to you about today, you might think that's really difficult to learn. It's probably because if you don't know what it is, it's because there's just lots of things, lots of individual things. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand it. But when you start to write a game, there's things you're going to have to learn that you probably don't know now. And it'll just take time, but it won't take forever. Okay. Moving on, some considerations. So the reason why you are learning so much is because a game has a lot of things in it. And if you're going to write a game, you need to start off with, you know, what is it that you're actually going to do? What is the gameplay of your game? Is it a shooter? Is it a platformer? Is it an RPG? Is it an easy game? Is it a hard game? What demographic are you targeting? Are you trying to make 5-year-olds cry because it's too hard? Or are you trying to make 20-year-olds cry because it's too hard? Or is it, you know, an FPS? The next thing you need to do is figure out your controls. Now that you're on Windows 8, you have a really wide range of controls that could be controlling your game. And if you target all of them, you'll probably have a mediocre approach to all of them. You won't have a great approach to some of them. So with Dodo, we had accelerometer support, but some of the devices with accelerometers were quite poor and actually made the game experience terrible. So what we did is we ripped that out and only had on-screen support and keyboard support. And that creates a better experience for what you have. So rather than having 50 people complaining that the accelerometer is really bad, you have one person complaining that the accelerometer is not there. And that way people actually get to enjoy the game how it was meant to be played. Mouse support, controller support, joysticks, the Kinect, the accelerometer, these are all things that you need to think about. And you need to really just target two to start off with, or target one to start off with, so you can create the best experience. Step three, your visuals. So You know, if you're not a designer, don't try to be a designer. Just try and create something incredibly simple. Go and buy the visuals. You know, are you going to do a 2D game? Are you going to do a 3D game? You know, there's places now that sell off the shelf art that you can use. You know, are you going to do a bitmap-based 2D game? Are you going to do a vector-based 2D game? And are the visuals going to be very simple, like sort of 8-bit style visuals or very sort of abstract style visuals? Or are they going to be complex and quite real? Now, no one in this room has the money to go and create a AAA title. They cost hundreds of millions of dollars. So don't go and try and create a AAA title. You know, one of the big things on Kickstarter is at the moment is people are getting $10 million on Kickstarter to go build a $100 million game. And so, you know, you need to realize that really high quality games, they're hard. They require massive teams and a lot of time and a lot of money. So don't go create that game. Unless you've got the money, or you can give it to me, I'll create it. audio. So audio, again, there's all these different aspects to audio. There's 2D, there's 3D, you know, 2D just sort of being, you know, left, right, effectively like stereo. But then you've got your sort of your 3D audio. Is it behind you, above you, below you, in front of you? And you can do that in all platforms. You can do that in HTML, but do you really need it in HTML? It creates a big overhead. And again, you need to do a lot more production. You need to think about what the sounds sound like when they're moving towards you, when they're moving away from you. Music. There's a really interesting thing that I'll show you with music on the platform, but music in Windows 8 has this great way of being able to be automatically muted if you're playing music in the background and things like that. But what's your music going to sound like? Is it simple? Is it atmospheric? Those sorts of things. Sound effects, again, you know, you need to go and find these sound effects. You need to make sure they're the right file size in terms of time. You need to make sure that they, you know, if you have, they're all the right volume. So this is what I mean by you'll be playing with a lot of tools when you go and create a game because you'll be opening up an audio editor to level the audio so all the audio files are the right sound size. And then you've got UI sounds, which, again, a different sort of set of audio all again. So I'll just do a quick platform comparison. So HTML is probably the simple, the best for simple 2D games. So if you're creating simple 2D games, HTML is probably the best place to be because all the libraries are there. They've been there for a while now. It's a great place to start writing games because if you're going to go and create a simple 2D game, I mean Dodo, you know, is probably a sort of visually rich but simple 2D game. If you're going to go and create a simple 2D game, you're confined to that. And a lot of developers, when they start developing games, they start with a 2D game and then they end up saying, oh no, we'll just wait. You know, Duke Nukem Forever was a 3D game that was going to be a simple 3D game and it just kept evolving and evolving and evolving. Being constrained by the platform is not necessarily a bad thing. It actually constrains your thinking because creating a game is almost sometimes a work of art and people want to go and create a piece of art rather than go and create, you know, just this game that's going to be a bit of fun. So you need to sort of keep yourself on track and staying on HTML will help you do that. There's a fantastic community. It's probably the best community for people that are learning. So the C++ community, it's almost like you get laughed at when you ask a question, whereas the JavaScript and the HTML community, it's like everyone wants to give you a hug because you don't know. So it's a very different community. It lacks common pipeline support. By that is, the pipeline I'm talking about is when a creative person gives me art, gives me a Photoshop file, and to when it's in the game, that's very manual at the moment. I have to go into Photoshop and run some JavaScript scripts within Photoshop to go and manipulate the image to turn it into a sprite sheet. I then go and pull that into the game to find out that the files that he provided me aren't necessarily the right size, or there's something wrong with the animation, or there's too many frames in the animation. So then I ask him to provide it to me again. And that's it's quite poor for him because from a creative perspective, he can't see immediately how it looks in game. And that's where that breaks down where the other platforms have that. So again, keeping the game simple makes it a lot easier to do that. And there's a lot of the game tool support though on the platform. There's Impact. Impact.js is a fantastic library. Dodo, I took the core of Impact and it's heavily modified, but Dodo is actually running on top of Impact. There's Easel. There's Game Salad, which is a tool that you can use to create, you know, it's like an IDE we use to create games. I think it's only on Mac at the moment, but you can create HTML-based games with that. 3JS and Box2DJS. And when I'm talking about HTML games, you can still, all the HTML that you use, you can use within the Windows 8 app. You could then go and throw on a website. So there's ways to sort of abstract some of the WinRT calls that you're doing for sharing and some of the very specific things like snap views. But at the end of the day, especially with Dodo, the way that I would test Dodo is that when I would publish it in my build, I'd also get it to FTP to a website. And so I'd actually say to the creative guy that I was working with, and he'd just open up Internet Explorer, and he'd actually see the same game playing the same audio or running within the browser. It would have to load the assets up off the file system, so it wouldn't be as sharp when it first came open, but it played exactly the same within the browser. And actually, sometimes I wouldn't even build. I'd actually have a browser pointing at my local file system, and I'd just refresh the browser just to see my changes. C-sharp is really good for complex 2D or simple 3D games. Much faster execution, better development environment. It's a very rich development environment. If you're not comfortable in JavaScript and you are comfortable in C-sharp, start here. Probably don't start with JavaScript, because you don't want to be learning a language while you're learning about game development at the same time. It'll just sort of overwhelm you a bit. It's very device-centric, and by that, you know, HTML has this sort of, you know, cross-platform sort of story, utopia, where it can run on all devices, and C++ is incredibly cross-platform. C#, I mean, if you're using Mono, anyone go to the Mono session before? Using Mono, you do get that, but not to the extent that you would, you know, or the power that you would when you're sort of doing that sort of the on-platform C#. There's a lot of ported game frameworks, so C++ is really where all game frameworks tend to start, and then they get ported to C# and other languages. A lot of them get ported to C# very quickly, probably because people are in Visual Studio and it's just really quick for them to do it, and they understand the platform. And there's a lot of game tool support. So Unity, you can develop in C#. Unreal has some support for it. Box2D is a 2D physics library that was used for Angry Birds. You know, that's available in C#. And you've got access to DirectX for Direct2D and Direct3D. C++ is really good for complex 2D still. You can still use it for complex 2D. That's what Angry Birds is written in. Or you can use it for, you know, complex 3D. Really, complex 3D needs to sit in the C++ world. And the reason is that you're doing so many things every frame. Every frame, 100 times or 60 times a second, you're doing thousands, if not, you know, millions of calculations. So having that extra power means that when you want to do something in the game or change something in your game, you're not always thinking, oh yeah, but we're already at our limit, we're already at our frame rate. As soon as we add something to the game, the frame rate will drop because it'll start running slower. So it's the fastest execution by far. It's highly cross-platform if you write your apps the right way, and I guess that's, you know, with the announcement around, you know, the Windows 8 platform and the Windows Phone 8 and the support for native code means that, you know, a lot of the game developers are really excited because now they can come onto the platform and they don't have to port to C#. Game pipeline tools, it's probably got one of the best, if not the richest, pipeline for the game development tools because it's just been around for so long as a game development platform. And Unreal, DirectX, Box2D, Havok, ODE, libraries and frameworks, ODE being a physics library, same with Havok. I mean, Havok is now a suite of libraries. They're all available in C++. So you can see that the industry really believes in it, but some of those are more because they want to be there for the AAA titles, so you might not need to use a AAA title physics engine. You might be able to use just an open source simple physics engine. Controller support. So I talked about this before. There's more devices than ever. Keyboard, mouse, different accelerometers for different devices, joystick, controller. You've got touchpad, you've got touch, and that changes your game completely. So before you used to have mouse over, but with touch you don't have mouse over. It just all of a sudden there's a touch that appears on an object. You've got gestures. If you have gestures in your game and you move to... Whoa. Next slide. Here we go. If you have gestures in your game and you move to one of these, then all of a sudden, how do you replicate the gestures on that? So again, if you keep it narrow, you don't run into all these problems again, but the things that you need to think about. HTML5 lacks really good controller support. And you run into these problems, you know, with even just keyboard input. If you think about mouse control, you also run into those problems. So if you're doing a first-person shooter where you look around with your mouse, as soon as that mouse leaves the browser, the actual game has lost input from the mouse. So you sort of have to come back in to keep turning or something like that. There's a few hacks to use plugins to hook the mouse and run those that. But at the end of the day, you're writing in HTML5 not to be using plugins to be everywhere. And then you've got direct input and X input. So direct input is sort of the old way, and X input's the new input, new way, new input way. And when it comes between X input and direct input, X input is better. And I found that I could make Pac-Man out of that graph in PowerPoint, so I put it on that slide. I couldn't resist it. It was excellent. But with X and direct input, this device moving forward, it will be always X input. You want to be using X input. So you have less setup. It's very easy to get the inputs from the device, both Xbox 360 and Windows. So if you're thinking of porting to Xbox, then you need to be looking at that. There's a large install base of these devices. So if people are going to pick up one of these and start playing on their game on their Windows 8 slate, then they've already got one. They don't have to go and get another device, which makes your game more accessible in the way that you want it to be played. I don't think if any of you played Super Meat Boy, when it loads, I think it says, you know, winners use controllers or losers use keyboards or something like that. And it's about they want you to play their game with a controller. And if you are using X input and people have an Xbox, they can just grab their controller, plug it in receiver and start playing. You also get headset support from the device, and you also get vibration support, so force feedback. Direct input there's a few drawbacks, but some of them are direct input, you can have more devices. So with X input, you can only have four. But if you're needing more than four devices on this single PC, you might want to question what you're actually doing there. And there might be a use case for it, but probably not in most games. The left and right trigger buttons, they behave as one button. And you sort of, you know, don't get headset support, you don't get vibration support. And it's, you know, if you want to sort of then go and cater for the different devices, you need to make sort of interact with them in specific ways. One of the other things that you don't get on HTML, which is something that's really important, is sprite batching. And it's something worthwhile just talking about quickly. So sprite batching is really about squeezing performance. It's when you have one sprite that you're painting many, many times on screen. And what happens in the pipeline is it optimizes it by setting up all the sprite represent where the sprite is, and it pretty much says to the graphics card, this image, here, go. So you end up with one draw call going through to draw onto the screen, but it's actually painting 50, 60,000 of the same sprite. It's used a lot for particle effects. So when you see smoke going up, you know, that's lots of tiny images all overlaying and creating those particles. When you see fire, when you see explosions, this is being used. So if you're doing an HTML game where you don't have this ability, you will find very quickly the performance of your game will just collapse. So it's something to be careful of. If I was building a HTML game and Dota had lots of particles and we just had to rip them all out because they're just so expensive, we could paint the whole screen again, or we could paint, you know, a few particles. And so, you know, you want to get that performance. There's a concept of atlases and sprite sheets. So sprite sheets are where you have every frame of an animation. Was that a question? Or?
Yeah, I was just going to say, so is that available?
Yes, yes. It's available through DirectX, which is available. So atlases and sprite sheets. So atlases and sprite sheets are almost the same thing. It's when you have a lot of images, and I'll show you some in a sec. And what's great is if I have 50 different images, all within the one texture, so one file, but different frames all within that file, I can actually include anything on that in the one draw call. And draw calls are where all your performance really, really gets hit when you're actually doing game development. And so I can throw that whole thing at the graphics card, and then it just draws everything that it needs to draw on the screen. It can draw them multiple times. And it's really for performance optimization. So particle effects, again, take a sprite, scale it, rotate it, modify it, draw it where all the particles are, and then step the particle engine and redraw them all again the next time. Repeat. But if we go across the sprite sheets and atlases, so I just put a colourful background on this, but it's actually two sprite sheets. So on the left-hand side is all the animations for the dodos on the home screen when they're pecking and, you know, just pecking around on that screen. And that's what actually gets used in the C++ version that I'm not going to show you because it's not done, but that's actually what's get used. So rather than painting for every single one, every bird gets drawn all at the same time. Bang, done. And so the same goes for all the branches. So as you're jumping up all those branches, they'll all be drawn in the same draw cord. Doesn't matter how many there are. There might be 1,000, or there might be 5, or there might be 1. It only ever gets drawn once. So that's a really big performance game, because you're not having to scale your game on what the complexity of what's on screen for performance. And the way that I just describe it to a few people, it's like a makeup shotgun. If anyone's seen The Simpsons and Homer walks up to Marge and just goes bang, and she makes it pretty, what actually happens is, you know, that sprite sheet comes in, it goes into the graphics card, and bang, out pops all these different images all over the screen. So it's sort of a good way to think about it, is it's really accelerating the performance of how you can do something really quickly and draw all over the screen. So let's go look at some code. So what I'm going to do here is pop down here. So here I am in my project here. It's just a C++ DirectX project. And one of the things that you'll notice there's a heap of libraries in here that come with Ogre, and I'm not going to go through Ogre so much. Ogre is the open graphics rendering engine. It's been around for a long time. I'm quite familiar with it. It's been ported to WinRT. Be careful, it still doesn't pass certification from memory, but it's something to be very aware of when you're using any open source library at the moment, is that you don't go build your apps and then go and see if they pass certification. It will pass certification very soon. The guys are working on it, but it's the last thing they want to get to. They want to get it working, working beautiful, and then get it to pass certification. So the reason it doesn't pass certification is the way that it links to the DirectX library, so it's more of a simple thing for them to do at the end. It's been around for a long time, so that's why I'm using it as well. It's quite mature. I contributed to it probably back in 2003, so it's very mature. And it's got a lot of features. It's got particle effects. It's got heaps of stuff. So in this project, I have a media folder which has material and materials. So the materials are what sits on all the objects. The models, like the meshes, the wireframes or the polygons that I'm going to be drawing. And the other thing that's probably of interest is the source code. So I'm just going to run this up. Sorry, that's my shirt making lots of noise. There we go. So I'll just run this up. And it's pretty straightforward. It doesn't really do much else. So in this app, I've loaded a mesh. So if I just pop this over here. And so in this app here, the app's called Ogrehead. And I'll make it a bit bigger there. And what you'll see is, if I just find the code. Hang on. Let me click in here, come in here. Where we are, create scene, there we are. So what happens here? So if you weren't using Ogre, you would have to do a few things. You would have to load in all the mesh data, create all the triangles that are on screen in that Ogre's head, and map all the textures based on the file that you've got of the mesh that you're importing. The great thing about Ogre is it allows you to take a mesh from any of the big 3D tools, export it, and once you've exported it, you can grab it, and then you can go and turn it into an Ogre file, which the framework will load and manage for you. So it manages all the texture mapping once you've done that in 3D, and sort of all brings it up there. So what you see here is the first thing I do is I set the background to black. So if I was to change that to blue, we'd end up with a blue background. I then go and load the mesh, the Ogre mesh, and then I go and put it in the scene. So that's what that's doing. It's creating a 3D scene with all these entities within it. If you're using just pure DirectX, you don't get this capability. So make sure you go and look for a framework on the platform you're working on that you're comfortable with, because the frameworks take care of a lot of things for you. This is C++. And there is a port for C# coming for Ogre. I think it's called Axiom from memory, but it's not there yet. And it's based on an older version of Ogre, so it's always falling behind, but it's another open source project. So as we go through, I go and add a light, and I go and add a light, and I go sit it over to the left. So what you can see here is that puts a shadow across the face of the ogre's face. So that's it's a pretty straightforward project. There's not really a lot in there. I create the ogre, the, uh, uh, the the entity, and I just load it straight into the scene. There's nothing fancy there. So I'll shut that down. And then I'll start talking about controls. So with the controls, just as a startup project, make it easier. So here we've got the same head again, and I can sort of look around the room. So I've just got an Xbox controller here hooked up to the receiver on the other side of the table there. And so I can look around the room at all of you. This is how I'll be doing question time, by the way. That guy. No. Yes, very good. That guy. Get out. So the thing is here is that I whack him over here. Oh, yep, there we go. There's his big mug. And what you'll see in this project, and so the way that I've evolved these projects, they sort of get a bit messy. I've actually taken the project of where I was, and I've copied and pasted it into another folder, renamed it, and then just evolved it just a little bit. Sometimes I've evolved it quite a lot, but it's just so that as I go through, you'll know that I didn't really take something massive. You know, it took me probably about a day to put a lot of this together. I probably thought about it a lot more than it did to actually to take me time to put it together. And I probably redid things more just because I didn't like the way they looked. So if I go into the source code here, I've created this class. So rather than just add the mesh to the entire scene, what I've done is something that's just a little bit more efficient. And here I've created a player head object. So this is just, I've encapsulated with an object the actual head, so I can go and create them a lot easier. I don't have to go and load meshes or whatever that's taken by the class, and I'll show you that class in a second. Then I add it to an array of them, and then I set it in the middle of the screen, add the point light, and do that. Now the reason I do that is because the player head itself, if I go down here, this is actually where the input gets managed. So the input's quite easy to manage, and it's quite easy to get. I mean, not long ago, it used to be a lot more code to go and manage input from a device like this. So what you have here is I go and grab the state of the input. So what I'm doing there is just saying, give me an object that represents the state of the input of the device. And I say, go and get the gamepad. And the gamepad here is always going to be player one. So just gamepad is always going to be player one. And then what I do is I take those values. Now those values are quite, actually if I break there, you'll probably even see what those values are. So if I break there, you'll see that these values, they're currently going to be zero because I'm not doing anything, but if I play, I go in here, you notice, minus 665, so I'm going to the left there, not even up or down, and it's already minus 665. And here you've got minus 32,768. So you get a lot of granularity, and so which means you can really manage that dead zone in the middle. You'll probably see later that I don't actually have a dead zone, and so things are actually, or he's already looking somewhere because of the gravity that's just pulling on the joystick. So they're quite sensitive. And so from that, you know, you can look around, you look up and down, and what I've done here is I reset the orientation, so I don't want to, because when I say pitch and yaw, pitch is moving this way and yaw is moving that way, so pitch is that way and yaw is that way. And the reason I reset his orientation is because otherwise he would just keep rotating and rotating and rotating every frame, sort of taking him back to the beginning. And one of the things to understand is, again, the framework is giving me all the rotation maths. Rotation maths, if anyone that's done 3D game development, is a bit of a nightmare to learn, just to learn off the bat. It's quite advanced maths. It's all matrixy maths. If you don't have to deal with it, the less you have to deal with it, the better. You will always hit a point in time where you'll have to deal with it because you just want to rotate something very specifically the way you want. But if you're using a framework, you can just sort of forget about it for a while. So here we have that happening. And so I've just done some maths, to sort of reduce it, make sure that it turns 45 that way and 45 that way. So that's that one. Okie dokie. I'll kill that. So the next thing we do is just that one. Got that. So we end up with multiplayer. Now, pass these around. Don't leave with them. You should have seen how fast my t-shirts went. Okay. So they're all working now. So you sort of just pass those around. We'll have a play. I'll work one over the other side. We can go around here first. I thought you were asleep. And I'm this one here. So it's like a Queen music clip or something. Anyway, I haven't seen that many of them moving at the same time. It's like, whoa. So anyway, but so as you can see here, and I don't know who's playing who there, but you end up with this scenario where, you know, you've got four people, four player, everybody's playing, everyone's controlling, and I'll go and show you the code that sort of took me just from where I was to there. Because all of a sudden, I mean, this isn't really a game, but, you know, you can see that very quickly you can end up with this sort of game mechanic with not a lot of code. So I'll move down into the source code here. It's cracking me up because on the side of the screen, it's like they're looking. Anyway, I got. It's weird. Got one looking at me, one looking at the code. You don't prepare for that, trust me. It's still going. Where is it? I'll get through this. Okay. So what are we doing here? Is that the right one? Sorry. I'm just trying to make sure that... Oh, yes, it is. So here what we do is when we create the player, we're passing a player ID. So we create four players, and we pass in the player ID. And that player ID, the code in this is sort of wired up so that all the IDs play nicely. And player 0 actually has controller 0. So what happens is when I call this update method gets called every frame that it renders. And when I call that, I pass in the player ID. And so when I pass in the player ID, I'm actually getting the state of that player. So therefore, I know that corresponds to this entity within the Ogre world. And so therefore, I can change and move the head around. So that's what's happening here. It's very straightforward. There's not much more happening than that. Behave yourself. Within Ogre, you need to do a few other things. Really what this is just some string concatenation happening up the top, but you need to sort of have your entities with unique names and your nodes with unique names so they can be referenced. So that's just using the player ID for that. And again, this is actually, this here for me is I go, oh, is the absolute Y position less than 129? That means if it's in a tiny dead zone, don't do anything. What I found is that, this would already be less than 129. It's such a small amount. So you need to create your dead zones to be quite big. The other thing you can do, though, with the actual game pads is you can actually set them so you get no reading until it's outside that dead zone. But sometimes you might want to manage it yourself. Okay. So that's sort of more controls and getting stuff on screen. And so the next thing is going to be audio. So set a startup project. Oops, can't do that while I'm debugging. Stop that. Oh. Okay. Hang on. Go away. You guys again. Come on. Okay. Now, so set this as a startup project. Go back in. And now we're going to do audio. So these are robots. Here also, someone's already found a fire button. Excellent. So here we have just some robots. They're just moving different, same sort of similar rotation sort of mechanic. But as you can hear, there's this music in the background. So actually, can we turn the music up just a bit? Just because... So while they're having a disco... Good work. So I'll pop everyone over here. So this is something interesting to note, is that... When you actually have audio running in a game, if it's not set as background music, and it's not like the game's not in that foreground state, I mean it's still in a foreground state, you will lose all audio. Yeah, don't fire because then no one will hear me. But but something to be aware of. But something to be aware of is actually you can create this really amazing thing within your game, whether be it on HTML or C# or on C++ using XAudio, and that's what I'm using here is using XAudio. Now, where are we here? Oh, let's just go into anything. I generally find... Oh, no, I don't want to play a video. My music. Well, than that, Carl, that's pretty PC, so that's okay. So what you'll find is that I didn't actually turn the audio off in the game, and then we have this audio playing. But as soon as I pause this, the game audio comes back in. And that's actually all being managed by Windows 8. I don't do anything. When I create the audio, I just say it's of this type. And when other audio comes in as background audio that's going to just completely trounce it, it keeps playing over the top of it. And it's just a fantastic thing for your games because you just don't have to manage that state yourself. It just happens automatically. But if somebody fires, and I go back here, you still hear the game sound effects. So there are different levels, but you can still hear those sound effects. So you can actually go and play your album. You can go and play your album, jump back into your game, and then the game audio, game music isn't playing over the top. You're not hearing the Halo score or the other music in the game. You're actually just hearing your music, but the game sound effects are still playing. So it's actually a really amazing thing. One thing to notice, though, is if, and I'm not going to jump on Skype. Oh, good. But one of the things, see, this is a game, right? One of the things that you should be really aware of is that if you get a Skype call, you get no audio. It cuts out the sound effects. And one night I was working on the game, and I was talking on Skype and going, my audio isn't working, I can't figure it out. And I was racking my brain, I was on the phone to this person for ages going, I can't figure it out, can you help me? Oh, I can't help you, oh, I'm going to go. And I hung up and it was just turned up so loud and it just blasted me. But yeah, so you know, it works implicitly. You don't have to put it in your app, and that's why you sort of don't notice that it's there. Okay, head on back. How are we going for time? Oh, we've got stacks of time. So the next one is sort of the last bit of the tech. Set S start up and go. So can you guys see that at all? It's a bit dark, hey? I win. Okay. Let's just go in here. And what I can do is I can just go and change that background color. So I'll change the background color to, go up, create scene. When I create the scene, I've created it with I've set the ambient light very low. Hang on, where do I change? Where do I set the black? Yeah. Can't remember where I set it now. If I go back up here, just remember where it all happens. Oh, it's the ambient light that I'm setting. Is it? No. I'll go back. No, I was going back just to check where it was there because there's less code. Because I kept advancing it, I knew that it was in there somewhere. So if I go back into here, go back up the top, find that create scene, I'll just set the color value to maybe give it a lot more ambient light. I'll just make it a bit brighter. You need to be a bit careful when you're dealing with ambient lights, the light that just gets cast on everything without shadows. So sometimes you can make the game overly bright and then you get no shadows. It just becomes completely flat like it's a cartoon. And that's building, so we'll just give it a bit of time. It's one of the things I think you find with C++ is you forget that you don't have these build times on other platforms that you do with C++, but I guess that's where you get the performance. Still can't see that. Hang on. Is it better? Hang on, I'll do it in brighter because it'll fix the problem. Man, you guys are zipping everywhere. I'll turn it up considerably because we don't need it to be super, super high. And now we wait for it to build. So in this demo, we've got four players. They're moving around. We've got four different meshes. So these meshes are actually quite large, although you can't tell on the screen. They're quite detailed. If you even bring them quite close, they're still quite detailed. And here you're in a scenario where you're not just moving things around screen, you're also rotating them as they move around. And so here you have all of these sort of flying around. And which one's me? I can't find myself. Huh? Am I there? Oh, there I am. Okay, I'm that one, I'm that ugly machine there. So this is like butterflies. But you can fly around the screen, you can do that, but you can't shoot. So one of the things that's missing here is that we need to go and add shoot support. So I'll go back into the code. And sorry guys. It is C++, I could be changing it while you play, but it's too much of a distraction. So when I go into the class, it's still called PlayerHead, but it's actually now the... what I can do here is I can go in here, and we weren't getting any audio then because we were muted. If I just quickly run up the app again, there is firing, but... So there's not actually a lot. So if you hit A, the green button, or the right trigger as well, the right trigger, they do the shooting. So what's happening there is we don't have any bullets, obviously, so we'll go and add some bullets now. I've got to stop the project, and then I'll go over the side, and I'll just pull in this code here, which is actually replacing that. And what I've done is I've gone and created a bullet. Now, you probably wouldn't do it this way, and there's no collision engine, so that's another thing that you've got to learn and got to sort of figure out. You can do very simple collision or you can do quite complex collision. But what I do is I've created a timer, and that timer, every 200 milliseconds, is going to allow you to shoot. So before, the shooting was sort of a bit sporadic because it was happening incredibly fast. Can't hear it in the audio, but it's probably happening every frame. The other thing that I do is if the timer gets bigger than 200 milliseconds, I reset it so that it'll start all over again. But when it does hit 200 milliseconds, I play the sound effect and I create this new bullet entity. Now the bullet, as you'll see, it looks amazing. It's just a cube. And it could be any mesh that you wanted it to be. And originally I had it as a like one of the ogre heads, and I was shooting ogre heads out, but there was too many polygons on screen very quickly. And then I set the velocity of it. Now the bullet itself, when it moves, it just updates its own position based on a velocity, and so it just keeps moving. And the velocity that I pointed in is the direction that we rotated, which I actually happened to go and grab earlier when I'm doing the other math, so I can just reuse that here. And then I set the bullet's position to the position of the actual ship that it belongs to, and then I put it in an array so that I can continually update it. So if we play that, and I haven't played this with four players, so we might end up with a crashed app in about 2 seconds. After 5 minutes of compilation.
You got parallel build at
that time? No, don't at the moment. So, I'll talk through that in a second. So, there's probably a lot of memory leaks regardless. So what happens is, so at the moment they look like mines that you're dropping. If you use that other controller, you can point your ship in a direction, and then they'll actually shoot in that direction. But as you can see, they sit on the screen for a while, and then they disappear. So to your question before, this is annoying. They sit on the screen for a while, but after a period they disappear. Now, it's a bit hard to see the shadows because we turned up the ambient light, but they actually are cubes. As you can see, when they move across the screen, you get a bit of perspective on them. So you could make these look like whatever you want. One of the things I really wanted to do was add particle effects, because the particle effects look fantastic and they can create trails and they can create light, but I just didn't get enough sort of time to sort of do that within the demo. But you can very, very quickly, all of a sudden put together a game that's, something like, a Geometry Wars, not necessarily as visually compelling. Take that. But yeah, so you very quickly can have something that, you know, you can play. One of the things that I'm doing there is that I don't actually have collision with anything that's stopping them going outside the screen. I actually just say, oh, if they're further than that, just set the max position to that. So I actually don't have real collision in here. With a collision engine, though, you would see that the bullets would hit the other ships, they'd destroy the ships, you could have hit points. When they die, then you need to respawn, you would then need to have score. So it gets quite complex very quickly when you've got to do all these little bits, and if you don't know how to do them, you've got to learn them. So that's why with a game, if you keep it really simple, you need to learn less, so therefore you can actually get the game out the door. So let me go across here, and I'll just quickly just go through what a bullet does as well. So when a bullet spawns, and away it goes, what it does is it lives for 1,000 milliseconds. So it actually marks itself to be removed and destroyed, but it lives for 1,000 milliseconds. So it lives for a second, and then it says, okay, remove me from the game. I don't need to be here anymore. This probably isn't even the most elegant way. The bullet itself belongs to the actual entity that created it. In a proper game engine, the bullet itself would exist, you know, not as a child of that entity. So the other thing that you can do, if I go into here, is you can also add light to the bullets. Now, this does create a bit of a performance overhead, but we'll just watch it. So the reason lights create a performance overhead is that every time a light ray hits something, it needs to be calculated as how it affects that that on screen. So this might completely look like a supernova, or it might work quite well. But I was having performance issues with it before because every light requires another render pass. So if you have two lights, then it needs to render everything pretty much twice, draw everything twice, or calculate everything twice. So if you have, So you can see that it's causing a lot of issues. You can see how it gets bright, and then it gets dark, and then it gets bright, and then it gets dark. And that's because every bullet is a light source. So you'll find that in some games, when they actually do bullets that create light, they're not actually doing that at all. What they're doing is they're overlaying something that makes that bit of the screen brighter, but it's not actually a light. Whereas these are true lights. They'll actually cast shadows. I mean, we turn the ambient light up so you can't really see it. But if you had them all sitting in the middle and one bullet goes past, you can see the light changing from one side to the other. I'm not sure why we have a safety dance playing in space, but it seems to be appropriate. So, hang on, one thing I'll do is... Where is... I'm actually going to go back to this one so people can dance around while I'm doing the rest of the presentation. Okay. Ah, boo. I can't do it anyway. It doesn't matter. So, okay. So I guess what you saw there was just a glimpse of Ogre, and I hope that sort of showed you what's possible with just a little bit of code. In C Sharp, if you're familiar with C Sharp, it's going to be really easy. If you're not familiar, use JavaScript or HTML or C++. You've got all your options there for you. There are game development kits out there. Obviously, there's Unity and a heap of others, but they give you asset management. They mean you don't have to go and trim and cut and redo all your files. You just re-upload them and they end up in your game. They give you a lot of pipeline control, getting you audio in the right format. You might have a stereo mastered piece of audio, but you're porting to phone, so you want to downsample it and make it mono and not stereo audio. It'll do that for you, so you don't have to micromanage that. They give you really good control support and what your controls do in-game, so you don't have to then go and handcraft that with your code. And they give you cross-platform development. A lot of them, you know, outside of Windows 8 and Windows Phone, you know, you sort of give yourself the opportunity to move wherever you want and keep yourself quite nimble. So Unity is really the big one. They made the big announcement that they're going to be coming to Windows 8. Unity is very popular. I don't know if any of you played Max and the Magic Marker, Temple Run, Tentacles. That's all written in Unity. So there's lots of games written in Unity, and some of them are big titles. The other one, which people would be very familiar with, is the Unreal development kit. It's very much targeted at first-person shooters, but you could write anything in it. The same way that Unity, you can go and create a first-person shooter. So just where to start? I think for HTML people in the room, go and grab any of these libraries and just start playing with them. There's so many things that you'll be learning along the way that you probably should just try a few of them and find out which one works for you. Some of them probably do the things that you're not good at. So let the frameworks and everything do the things you're not good at, and you can focus on the things that you're good at. For C sharp, these are sort of some of them that are out there. It's changing quite rapidly. HTML's changing the fastest because it's really the emerging markets. But C sharp is also changing. We're seeing a lot of libraries becoming sort of WinRT safe for the store, so they pass certification. There's a lot of WinRT versions of those libraries coming out, so that's something else that you should go and have a look at. And then for C++, you know, there is hundreds of options out there, open source projects, commercial, free, there's everything. And I think one of the things is some of those are 15 years old, you know, and they're still really good engines. And they're really mature and they've got great communities because the community is 15 years old. So if you are looking at C++, I'd really go and have a look at those as well. But, you know, so as I said before, be warned. Check that the third-party libraries work in WinRT. Some of them don't work in WinRT. So sometimes people go and build just a Win32 or like a desktop app. And then they go, oh, I'll go and create a Windows Store app. And all of a sudden, they find that the libraries don't work. The other one is that they need to pass certification. So they may work, but they might not pass certification. Most of the libraries are getting there these days, and I think it's starting to become a bit more evident if you're not going to pass certification, because the certification test is capturing it a lot earlier. But definitely go and have a look and make sure that your libraries will pass certification. Otherwise, you might end up wasting a lot of time if they never do. And only use libraries from active communities. Don't go and use a library from a dead community, unless it's something that's doing something like a physics calculation for you that never changes and it was perfect 5 years ago. But if it's not from an active community and it doesn't pass certification, it probably never will. The other thing to be careful of is in active communities, it might pass certification today, but somebody might make a change and tomorrow it might not. So next steps. My advice is to not create a great game first. You'll have a lot of fun doing that. The first game that BitRave did, which we haven't published because we'll probably get beaten up for it, it was called Intray Outray. And in the game, there was a on the screen, there was an intray, and on level one, there was one piece of paper on it, and there was an outray. And you dragged the piece of paper into the outray, and that was level one. And level two, there was two pieces of paper in that tray, and you dragged them across. It had great audio. It was really good. We've probably spent more time on the audio. But what we learned from that was a lot. We learned how to do controls, touch, audio, asset management, all these other things, so that then when we went to create Dodo, which was our next step, you know, not creating a AAA title, creating just a simple fun game, what we learned, we took to that, and we didn't have to relearn it. So we got to focus on getting the game right and not figuring out how to play audio at the right time. So make it simple. And if you make it simple, you need to really focus and not lose focus. Because if you go and create a game in 3 weeks, which is not nearly the game that you wanted to make, or you sort of fumble around for 6 months, you probably would have got there eventually by releasing all these little games anyway. So something to really keep focus on what you're doing. And if you don't believe in it, then you should just dump it and try something else. But don't keep trying to evolve something you don't believe in. And learn. So there's a lot to learn. There's some of the things that you probably need to get across as you're building your games, the things you'll need to understand. And by getting across them all, you won't do that all in one shot. You need to sort of start small and learn about, you know, the little things first, and then build your way up so that you're actually not spending your time learning and thinking, I hate game development. So thanks very much. These are just some of the sites that you can probably check out. You can catch me around. I'll be at the Locknode. I'm not flying out straight away, so you might be kicking around for a bit. Thank you very, very, everyone for your time. I'll go to some questions. Any questions? Any questions?
Can you merge this to like an application app with a 3D object?
Sorry, what was that? Sorry.
Game, you have to declare it as a claim application, and like an app, you have to declare it as an app application, right? So, but I want a 3D mechanism in the app.
Yeah, you can use 3D. You can definitely use 3D in something that's not necessarily a game.
Okay, so doing like a C sharp code. Can I actually have that code?
That code.
That project.
Yeah, you probably can. You got your details? I'll send it across to you. Oh, we got USB right now. Actually, no, I can't give it to you. because some of the models in it are proprietary.
Ah.
I own the licensing for them.
Yeah, that's good. Just want the ogre head, because I already come up with the idea.
On the ogre head.